Life Architects. Adam Carroll here with another episode of the Build a Bigger Life podcast. It is episode number 162, and you are in for a big treat today. My guest on this episode is a man by the name of Dan Sheeks. Dan is an educator. He's an investor. He is the founder of SheeksFreaks.com, which we'll talk about on the show today. I'm sure you're very intrigued. Who wouldn't want to get freaky with the likes of Sheeks Freaks? Dan is on a similar mission to mine, although his way of going about it is, in my opinion, truly, truly awesome. Dan is an educator in Colorado, which means he's in the classroom at a high school there in Cherry Creek, Colorado. He is an educator of business, of entrepreneurship, and ultimately he's building a community of young people that are interested in financial independence at a young age. The way Dan does this is so inspiring and so awesome. I had the opportunity to visit with some of these superstars a couple of weekends ago. There were probably about 30 young people on a Zoom, and they were all part of the Sheeks Freaks community. And it gave me hope for the future of young entrepreneurship. These young people are driven, they are motivated, they are making really, really impactful changes in their life, changing their future financial tree, if you will, because many of them came from maybe disadvantaged backgrounds. So you'll love the story that Dan has to tell of what makes a freak and why we should all aspire to be more freak-like. The show today is sponsored by theshredmethod.com. If you're looking for a way to blast away debt, to create massive amounts of freedom and flexibility, and ultimately own more of your income, that is the key, owning more of your income, not having to work half or 70% of the year to then just own the last 30%. TheShredMethod.com will teach you how to do all of this and have insane liquidity. So visit TheShredMethod.com and watch the Kickstarter training that's available right this very minute. What we cover on the show is taught in greater depth at TheShredMethod.com. So what are you waiting for? Hundreds of couples are blasting away debt and they're building equity that will ultimately enhance and enrich their monthly cash flow. That's good. Hey, if you've got disruptive ideas that require a platform to teach others, look no further than Kajabi. When we built the courses tied to Mastery of Money and Build a Bigger Life and the Shred Method, my operations extraordinaire, Molly Rose, built them on Kajabi. And not a week goes by that we don't see new students and therefore revenue through that Kajabi portal. So check out buildabiggerlife.com/Kajabi. That's K-A-J-A-B-I for a free trial and some killer swag. I'm drinking coffee from my Kajabi mug today, in fact. Now, let's get to the original Sheeks freak, Mr. Dan Sheeks. Dan Sheeks, welcome to the Build a Bigger Life podcast.
Thanks, Adam. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. You know, the saying, birds of a feather flock together. I feel like you and I are probably in the same club somewhere, and it's that club that like has a passion for teaching young people and investment, learning everything you can about money, all of that. And we're going to get into all of that on the show today. But you know, the first question I ask of everyone, it is, what do you love about your life right now?
Good question. But I want to go back. You said birds of a feather. I think we should definitely let everybody know we're both Iowa boys. Went to school, I think, 20 miles from each other.
Indeed.
Warburg, you and I. And basically, I think we're maybe a year different in age. So yes, we are definitely birds of a feather. To go back to your question about what do I love about my life, that is an easy one. My wife and I are expecting our first kid. It's going to be a boy in about 6 weeks. May 3rd is the due date. And so, you know, it's for those who are parents out there, they completely understand that that is kind of priority number one in our life right now, getting ready for that change, that lifestyle. We're taking online classes, you know, we're reading books, we're getting the nursery ready and all that fun stuff that goes with your first kid. And we are super pumped. And we've been looking forward to starting family for so long that it's finally going to happen. And we're just so excited for that.
That's amazing. Congratulations. Have you gone so far as to put all the receptacle plugs, you know, in the house, like covering all the...
Have them bought, but we haven't put them in yet.
Okay. I remember there was this period of time in our life where we were like, oh my gosh, we can take the receptacle plugs out. because our kids will no longer stick their fingers in there. And it was very, very much a red letter day. So enjoy the process of having to fish those things out every time you plug something in. It's totally worth it. It's totally worth it.
I'm sure it is.
Well, that's awesome, Dan. That is awesome. Tell us a little bit about how Dan Sheeks became Dan Sheeks, the high school educator, the real estate investor, the author. I mean, you're doing all these things. What was the progress in getting there?
Sure. Yeah. I'll try to give you the short version because I tend to ramble, but I think the main piece of that is that I've been teaching high school business classes for, this is my 18th year, finishing up my 18th year. In that job, I teach classes like entrepreneurship, marketing, personal finance, things like that. And business has always been my main interest, a passion. Personal finance, once I started teaching that, well, I should say even before I started teaching that, because I haven't always taught personal finance in high school. I'd say about 5 years ago, I really started to heighten my passion for that type of knowledge and came to be really aware of the fact that all young people should have to take a class like that. And so started advocating for personal finance class to be a high school graduation requirement in my district, in my state, which is Colorado, where I live now, and unfortunately hit some big roadblocks. I'd even say brick walls, trying to advocate for that high school graduation requirement. And so kind of took a step back and said, well, how else can I do this? How else can I spread this important information to young people? And so that's when I came up with the Sheeks Freaks community, which I started about 2 years ago. That's growing, that's doing well. And yeah, there's a book in there, which I'm sure we'll get to. And so that's kind of it in a nutshell. I love my teaching job. I love working with high school kids. It's super rewarding, challenging at the same time. But those are where my focus, my passion is business, personal finance, high school, real estate investing, all this stuff.
Yeah. I want to break down each one of those one by one. Starting with high school kids, what most surprises you? I mean, I have a lot of listeners that I think have probably kids of all ages, but some high school students for sure. What surprises you about the high school students that you teach, that you have in class, about whether it's their understanding or lack thereof around money? What's been a surprise for you in that?
I thought you were going to ask the question just in general, but if you're talking about money, what surprises me about their financial prowess and how well they know money or don't? I'd say the most surprising thing is how vastly different they are with those concepts. When they come into a classroom and, you know, if I'm teaching personal finance on day one, I do try to get a good understanding of where everyone's at. And it runs the gamut from someone, you know, usually not one, but a few students who don't know anything, to some students who are lucky enough to have parents who get it, who are financially literate and who have, you know, spent a lot of time educating their young teenager on money concepts. So they come to the table with much more. That's probably the most surprising thing is that they're so different.
Yeah. And do you find that there is a hunger for the information you're teaching, or is that a fairly wide discrepancy as well?
So the personal finance class that I teach is an elective. And so most of the students in there are there because they wanted to take the class, or sometimes their parents wanted them to take the class. So the parents said, no, you're going to take this class. But if the parent finds value, usually the child isn't too far behind. Yeah. Unfortunately, it is an elective class, right? So there's many, many more students at my high school and many other schools that don't have the interest, don't take the class, don't get the education, and, you know, are financially illiterate for decades of their life until probably like you and me, they just kind of learn by trial and fire and somewhere in their 40s, maybe figure it out.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. In the state of Iowa, I think it was 6 years ago, maybe, that it became
mandated that it's a graduation requirement. Maybe not even that long ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember hearing the story that it took the state legislature 2 days to deliberate what the definition of financial literacy was.
I think I may have heard that about Iowa. Yeah.
Just crazy. And I thought, if we're spending 2 days deliberating what financial literacy is, we have the wrong people at the table. And so I appreciate the fact that you fought the good fight. It's frustrating for me to hear that you ran into a brick wall, because every state, in my opinion, and I'm sure you would agree, every state should be mandating this.
Absolutely. I mean, we can go down this path, which I love talking about. I get a little bit worked up about the fact that I think our country does a huge disservice to our young people, high school kids specifically, by not requiring that. There are currently about 7 or 8 states in our country that require a standalone semester-long personal finance class for high school graduation. And you know, they get it, and they've decided to do that on their own, because education, as we know, is a state by state run endeavor. It's not, you know, very little comes from the U.S. government. It's a state controlled thing, which I'm glad that it is that way. But yeah, most states, my state, you know, my home state of Colorado, there is no requirement. Some districts have decided to make that a requirement, but the vast majority of kids graduating from high school in Colorado haven't done anything around personal finance. And then there's kind of in between. There's a lot of states and districts that will require, and this is where the data gets a little fuzzy, because they'll require something, right? Actually, my district, state of Colorado, requires that high school students have some personal finance education, but they haven't really specified what that needs to look like. So it gets watered down. And I can speak to my high school specifically, that gets watered down to about 3 or 4 days in a U.S. government class of all places, where they spend maybe a couple of days on budgets and then maybe another day on investing, and then they move on to their other required curriculum. And so they meet the state requirement, but it's really doing nothing for our teenagers.
So they get a good solid 3 hours of instruction over 18 years, right? Before they're kicked out of the house.
It's really pretty sad that our country doesn't put more value on financial literacy and educating our youth.
Yeah, agreed. As far as the entrepreneurship classes that you're teaching, how, I assume that's an elective as well?
Yep.
And what do you hear from students when they come into entrepreneurship? What kind of ideas are they bringing to the table?
Again, it's a pretty big variety. You know, some of them want to start businesses that are so big and so overwhelming, honestly. And then some of them just want to sell cookies in the hallway of the school. Yeah. And so we just kind of take all of those ideas, we, you know, put them into groups, and then they kind of work as teams. But it's a fun class to teach because it's so creative. They get to be very, very creative throughout the entire class, where, you know, a subject like personal finance, not so much.
Right.
That's
awesome. I have to imagine if we are truly birds of a feather and business was your first love, that you had some entrepreneurial venture in college. Was there a Dan Sheiks in Waverly that was like selling something on the corners?
My first entrepreneurial venture actually was, I was young. I'm going to say maybe 10 or 11. And my sister and I, with the guidance of my mother, started a little business where we had a Cocker Spaniel, purebred female dog. Her name was Sandy, right? And so we would take that dog and have it bred with a male purebred Cocker Spaniel dog. And then we would have the AKC papers, and we would sell the puppies as purebred Cocker Spaniels. And you know, we would get money when we sold the puppies, and then we had a checking account, and we'd have to deduct dog food and vet bills and shots and AKC fees and stuff like that. So we had a little business back then.
P&L.
Yeah. A little bit. It was fun. Yeah. So that's probably where kind of it started, I guess.
That was before the days of Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist too. You were probably marketing that in the newspaper and word of mouth and stuff, right?
Exactly. It was, yeah, about three or four lines of text in the classified ads of a few of the local newspapers, Cedar Rapids Gazette, Des Moines Register, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Back when those were probably pricey ads to place too.
I don't remember how much they cost. I don't think it was that much.
Wasn't it? It was very expensive. Okay. Yeah. I love stories like this because I find that anyone who's passionate about entrepreneurship probably did something, you know, along the way to that, that fired that up and became their thing. You might remember this. At Wartburg, my cousin and I placed a popcorn vending machine in one of the dorms. It was kind of in one of the central halls of the dorms at Wartburg. And it was a big 7-foot tall machine, had a big fiber optic display on it. I had borrowed $5,000 in student loan money to buy this,
oh, nice. This
stupid vending machine.
Government funded, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, government funded entrepreneurship. But it was a great lesson. While other people were learning about filing tax returns, we were actually doing it. And
yeah.
So yeah, it was just an awesome, awesome experience. Tell me a little bit about how real estate kind of came into your life. Because I know you're a real estate investor on a number of different fronts.
Yeah. At this point, it's a very important part of our investing portfolio. But my wife and I, when we met 5 years ago-ish, she was starting to do some real estate investing before I met her. I had one property before we met as well. And when we met here in Denver, we both kind of, it was one of those where 1 + 1 = 5 when it came to real estate investing. And at the same time, honestly, we found Bigger Pockets, that community, and really just started diving into everything they had, reading books on our own. We both were completely sold on the idea of real estate investing.
Yep.
And so together, you know, our incomes doubled when we got together, and our expenses decreased because we were, you know, at some point living together and utilities and stuff. So we had money to invest, and we've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, that's awesome. When you started, were you investing in single family properties, or did you dive right into multifamily?
I had a single family. My wife had single families, and one of them she had exchanged for a multifamily. So we were just starting both of those when we first met. Yeah.
Yeah. And today the portfolio includes, I think I saw some Airbnb properties. You're doing a Burr property out of state potentially.
Yeah, we have one short-term rental property, an Airbnb property. We have multifamilies, single families, and then we did go out of state because the market here in Denver is pretty crazy. So a little over a year ago, we started investing in just outside of Detroit, Michigan. We now have 3 single families there. We birded them all. They're doing okay. They're not, you know, they're base hits. They're not home runs, but they're base hits.
Yeah.
And yeah, going forward, we're still trying to decide if we want to do more investing out of state or come back to Colorado. But yeah, we have 15 units total now. We're not one of those couples, or, you know, our strategy isn't to own hundreds of units. We definitely do not want that. We want to own between 15 and 20. That's what we need for our future life together. We'll probably start paying the mortgages off, snowballing those, increasing the passive income from each investment, and be good. Call it a day.
Yeah, love it. Your son is coming into the world at just the right time, Dan. This is amazing. He'll have the advantage of you having already made the mistakes that you did, and now there's just lessons to be learned along the way. Like,
yeah, you know, we're both in our 40s, so we're having kids late. That's just the way it worked out for us. I do not regret it because, you know, as a teacher, I will have a pension and I'll be done. I'll be retired in about 7 years. So when my kid is, you know, just starting school, probably first grade, I'll be done teaching. My wife already retired from teaching a couple years ago. Well, last year, I guess. She manages our real estate. So she's growing our portfolio. She manages most of our properties here in Colorado, and she has a couple of side hustles, but she's basically home all day right now anyway. And so, yeah, it's, there's some advantages to having kids late in life. I'm, you know, there are advantages to having them early in life too, but we are, we like the way things worked out for us. Yeah.
This definitely sounds like a bigger life.
It is. It is. And it, you know, it's all having no stress about financial security and money is a big part of that big life. And it just has to start there.
Yeah. No doubt. You mentioned Bigger Pockets earlier, being part of that community. I know that they are publishing your book. Will you give my audience a little bit of a taste of the book and what they can find inside?
I would love to. Yeah. So Bigger Pockets is going to publish a book that I'm writing, or I actually just finished it last month. The title is going to be First to a Million, and subtitle is Teenagers, a guide for teenagers to achieve early financial independence. So it is for teenagers specifically. It is specifically about early financial independence and going down that path. Now, I do cover many personal finance topics because that has to be a foundation to go to that, those higher level concepts.
Sure.
So we cover index fund investing in there, as well as real estate investing. So the book will be released November of 2021. So we still got a ways to go before it's out there, but super excited about that.
Yeah. What an amazing accomplishment to have a community like Bigger Pockets release it. Cause my assumption is you're going to have a built-in audience from their community. I mean, I would think the book will be adopted right away.
Yeah. I give Bigger Pockets some credit. They are taking a risk with this book. They have, as maybe people know, they have several very successful real estate investing books. They only have one book they've published that is more of a personal finance type book. And that's Set for Life by Scott Trench. And it did really well. Yeah. So for them to take a risk and say, we're going to publish another book that's not real estate focused and specifically for teenagers, that's a little bit of a risk for them. But yes, they have a great community. Many people in that community are either parents of young people or know teenagers. And so, you know, we're hoping that we reach a lot of teenagers through the adult, you know, that's our main target market, is reaching the adults who will maybe buy that book, gift it to a teenager. That's actually why it's being released in November, right before the holidays.
Yeah, I love it. The book that I wrote, Mastery of Money for Students, when I turned it into a curriculum, when there was a curriculum component to it, mm-hmm. it really took off in the school districts. And I wonder if that will happen to yours, where they will begin, you know, school districts may adopt your book as a supplement to what they're already teaching, just as a means of giving someone an assignment of, hey, go read chapter one. And
yeah, I it's definitely, you know, part of the overall plan down the road is to explore those pathways for sure.
Yeah, it's awesome. So you mentioned the community as well, your community, Sheiks Freaks.
Yep.
And what was the genesis behind all of that? How did you start this community of you know, teenagers and young people online who are living differently?
Yeah. The genesis was when I found out that I couldn't, you know, that my efforts to make personal finance education a requirement in Colorado were going to, that was going to be a very, very long road to hoe, a very difficult one. And it has been. I haven't given up that fight, but there's just a lot to overcome there. So I said, well, in the meantime, what can I do? Because I know that this type of education and knowledge for young people is critical. What can I do to help? So that's where the idea of the Sheiks Freaks community came from. And so I started it, yeah, just a little over 2 years ago.
And if people are interested in finding out more about that, are they limited to teenagers and, you know, 20 somethings, or is there a lot of content in there that an adult might find interesting?
You know, that's a good question. I kind of market to 15 to 25 year olds.
Okay.
Or, you know, we have website and social media. But honestly, and I'll go back to the book I'm writing. The book is for teenagers, the book that will be published. The book and the Sheiks Freaks community, if you're an adult, I don't care if you're in your 30s, 40s, or 50s, and you know that you have a lot to learn. You're kind of at square zero or you're just starting off with financial literacy, then all of those platforms that I just mentioned can be very useful to you. I mean, I guess you could think of it as Personal Finance for Dummies, right? That series of books. You know, if you, many people in their 40s know a good amount about personal finance, but many don't. Many, because of the fact that we don't get it in our public school systems or private school for that matter, they are starting at square zero. So the Sheikh Shreve's community in the book would be super helpful to them. You just have to kind of ignore the idea that it's aimed at young people. The content can still go a long way to help you feel more confident about how you deal with your money, even if you're much older.
Yeah. You know, it seems like you are building a community that's nationwide as well. This is not just local kids local to you, correct?
Yeah. We have members from all across the country and even outside of the US. Yeah.
What makes you different? You know, there's a lot of high school financial education teachers out there.
Yeah.
But I only know a handful that are building online communities and writing books and doing real estate investing. And I mean, it's so interesting that you're taking all of that passion and experience and expertise, doing it in the classroom, but then also spraying all that back out into the world beyond just your classroom there in Colorado.
Yeah. To answer the question, what makes me or Sheikh Shreve different? I think it's because it's not just about personal finance, although that is a big part of it and that is the foundation. But the Sheikh Shreve's community and the book are both about early financial independence. And to my knowledge, and I've looked many, many different places, and I know you have too, Sheikh Shreve's is the only community or platform that is specifically for young people, and it is about early financial independence. Yeah. So it incorporates things like passive income and frugality and real estate investing, side hustles, increasing income through different mechanisms. And you know, there are many, many great resources out there, some of which, Adam, come from you, that teach young people about personal finance. And those are absolutely needed and critical. But kind of going to that next level of how do I use my personal finance knowledge and take it to the next level so I can achieve early financial independence in life?
Yep.
How do I do that? That's where Sheikh Shreve's comes in and spreads that knowledge to young people.
Is there a lot of emphasis placed on the freak part of it? Like what my question is, like, what does it take to be a freak? Is it that entrepreneurial drive, the side hustle desire?
The freak. So the Sheikh Shreve's comes from, my last name is Sheikh. So, and then the freak part is that I've always said to my kids in my classroom, to the kids that I mentor online, if you are young and you actually think about your money and you're focused and driven and motivated to learn about your financial future, that is not the norm. Most teenagers don't want anything to do with that. They want to think about their social media, Netflix, their favorite show, whatever. But so if you are young and you are interested in learning about your financial future, you are different. You are unique. You are exceptional. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of a freak, right? In a good way, you are a freak because you are different. And so that kind of branding or label, we also call it Five Freak in the book. We refer to those young people as Five Freaks. I think it resonates with teenagers because it is a little edgy and different and memorable. To be a freak is a good thing when it comes to your money. Yeah.
Yes. We should all be freaks.
I think you and I are, and probably
we are. Yeah, we're definitely freaky.
We are Five Freaks. Yeah.
The FIRE movement we had talked about a little bit pre-interview. And for my listeners' sake, FIRE stands for Financially Independent Retire Early, which can be defined a number of different ways for a number of different people. We talked about that. There's barista FIRE, people who take a 50% job at Starbucks, so they have health benefits, but they have plenty of money, and that's what they do. That's how they live. There's Lean FIRE, Fat FIRE, Part-Time FIRE, right? All these different versions. What was it about the FIRE movement that drew you?
Well, that's a good question. I think just being aware that, or at least knowing there's another option other than the typical American dream pathway of the 9 to 5 until you're 65 grind, was so enlightening and kind of aha, like, you mean I don't have to work until I'm 65? Wait a minute. Let me back up here. Yeah. That, you know, when people started talking about, you know, reaching financial independence in their 30s or even 20s, I started paying attention and, you know, reading different articles, blog posts, podcasts. Bigger Pockets community is big into that. The Choose FI community, which I'm a huge fan of, also, you know, that podcast really was probably the one that taught me the most about early financial independence.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is not for everybody, right? There are some sacrifices. There are, you know, it's hard work to make extra income and to live frugally. Although frugality is not about being cheap. It's about only spending money on things you value. So, I mean, you still absolutely should and could and should be happy on your way to financial independence, because you still should be spending money on fun things and luxury items, but you're just doing it very intentionally on things that you actually value. So although there are some sacrifices and hard work involved with early financial independence, it can still be very fulfilling. And to have the option to buy back, or I shouldn't say buy back, but to free up decades of your life by not having to work, I mean, what an amazing option that everyone should know about. It's not for everybody. And that's why I wrote the book for young people, was to say, the idea of working until you're 65, there's nothing wrong with that. It is a very noble way to live your life. Many people have gone down that pathway and found a lot of happiness and fulfillment. And it's not a broken path. It's just one path. There's another path. Let me tell you about early financial independence. And now that you know about both, only you can decide what is the best choice for you. But now at least you know of more than one option. And yeah, that's the main message from the book, actually.
I love it. I heard Ramit Sethi, the author of I Will Teach You to Be Rich, at a conference, and he said something that just like literally cut me to the bone. And it was, you can spend as much money as you want on the things that are meaningful to you, as long as you are exceptionally intentional about not spending money on the things that aren't.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, damn, that, like, you know, we don't eat out a lot. Just, my wife's a great cook.
Yeah.
My kids technically are kind of homebodies. They, you know, if we said, well, let's go out to eat, they're like, nah, can we just eat here? Mm-hmm. And by cutting that out, it is a massive, massive chunk of money that I think most families, they go and I would say blow. Some of them may say, no, we really thoroughly enjoy dining out. But I can always tell the families that it's not a special event. It's just like, oh, going and grabbing pizza somewhere and spending $50 is a normal thing.
Yep.
Because they're in, they're out, and it's, you know, 45 minutes, where we would go and we'd take our time and we would like really enjoy it. We'd have discussion and, you know. So I think there's something to that you can spend all the money you want on the things that are meaningful to you.
Yes, absolutely.
As long as you get really disciplined about not spending on the things that aren't.
Yeah, what you're describing is that for you and your family, food, I should say, you know, spending a lot of money on food at high-end restaurants and gourmet food, that is not something that your family values. So you choose to cook at home a lot.
Right.
Maybe even choose to cook at home in a frugal way because you don't even need to have the top ingredients when you're cooking at home. And so going back to Ramit's quote that you mentioned, he is describing frugality to a T. Frugality is not about spending the least amount of money possible. It's about spending money lavishly on the things you value, but then not spending money on the things that you don't. And it is tough for some people because in the United States, especially in our society, there's this consumerism mentality that's trained us, or maybe brainwashed us is a better word, to think that we should spend everything we make. We deserve to spend. So if you make $50,000 a year, you should spend $50,000. If you make $200,000 a year, you should spend $200,000 a year. If you make $1 million a year, you should spend $1 million, and so on. Or maybe even more, because with credit card debt, it shows that we spend sometimes more than we earn. And if you are okay with working until you're 65, then absolutely you can do that. And you know what? Spending money is fun. Spending money feels good. Even when you're buying things you don't value, you don't really need, you don't really want it that much, but you just have the money in your account, so why not buy it? there's nothing wrong with that as long as you know the trade-off, right? There's a trade-off that you're going to have to now work till you're 65 versus if you didn't go on that expensive vacation, if you didn't have that high-end luxury car, if you didn't have the six-bedroom house instead of sort of for a three-bedroom house, you could probably save decades of your time by reaching financial independence in your 30s, in your 40s, or younger.
Yeah, it's truth bombs being dropped right here. That's awesome. And what a blessing for the students that are in your class to hear that from you. Because I take nothing from any of the other teachers, educators that are out there teaching financial literacy. Mm-hmm. But to learn from someone that is walking the talk is a very big deal. One of the things that I was getting a lot when I was out speaking on college campuses were questions from students about so-and-so tells me to do this, or I got this advice from so-and-so. And my question was always, what is their lifestyle like? What are their investments? How much passive income are they making? Where are their investments right now? And what I'd often find is they were just, maybe they were pontificating a little bit. They had read some books, but didn't have any formal experience in the thing.
Yeah.
And so to have a mentor like you is super important. What advice would you give your students or young people coming out of college in terms of mentorship and guidance?
Oh, I could give them lots of pieces of advice. I would say, if we're talking maybe about teenagers, because college is even a little bit different, but in your teen years, you should absolutely be learning as much as you can and digesting that however you want. You know, everyone learns differently. So whether that's watching YouTube videos, listening to podcasts, reading books, reading blog articles, however you learn best, just consume as much as you can. Also, you should be building your credit score. Also, you should be using a credit card. Credit cards can be bad, but if they're managed right, they are an amazing tool, which I'm sure you know. I tell all the young people I work with, the day you turn 18, roll out of bed, go to your computer, apply for your first credit card, and then use it responsibly. Start a side hustle, start a business, or at least work a part-time job. Save your money, track your income, track your expenses, use one of those free apps to do that. Get a checking account, get a savings account. And if you're under 18, you can still do almost all of those things, if not all of them, with some parental help. You know, a parent can help you open a checking account, savings account. They can help you open a brokerage account. They can start a 401k with you, for you. They can help you get a credit card. You can be an authorized user on a parent's credit card. So it doesn't, if you're 9 years old, you got to wait. You can still learn, but all those other things need to wait a little while. But that would be my advice. Just start learning and using the tools, set yourself up.
It's all super good advice. My kids, 13, 15, and 17, all have checking and savings accounts. The two older ones both have credit cards. They're buying gas and my daughter might go shopping and use her credit card and she pays it off right away. But all of that was very intentional in setting them up with a good credit score by the time they're in college. And it's so important to have these young people understand this stuff early.
You know what it reminds me of, Adam? I think I was watching a YouTube of yours. It might have been your TED Talk. I think it might have been in the TED Talk that I watched. And you mentioned that at some point, maybe it was after that TED Talk, a young guy came up to you and was telling you about how his parents basically made him pay his own bills when he was in high school. Does this ring a bell to you?
It does, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember
and that idea, I just loved it and it blew me away. And I now write about that idea and I take it to a higher level and I say, parents, if you're comfortable, this is not for every parent, but if you're comfortable with this idea, here's what you can do to set your child up for their best financial future. Starting right about the time they're maybe eighth grade, ninth grade, you get a checking account with them, you get them their own debit card, and you make them financially responsible for their own expenses. And so they have to bill pay you through their checking account to your checking account, their share of the cell phone bill, their share of the utilities for the house. And I think I did stick with this. The young man that was talking to you about this idea, he said that my parents told me they would pay for my house, my living expenses, my rent, basically, and my food. So I kept that. I said, you know, parents, you can tell your child you're, you know, you can live here for free and all the food that's in the house is for free. But when we go out to eat, we're going to split the bill and you got to pay for your share with your debit card out of your checking account. Or if they're using a credit card, even better, then they can pay their credit card bill off and they can rack up some points. And so, you know, if you're going to go on vacation, they have to pay for their share of the vacation. Now you're giving them income, right? So you're giving them, whether you want to call it an allowance or a stipend, and that's going to be several hundred dollars probably because they're paying for all their expenses. But when they get in the habit of sitting down every month, hopefully with parents' help in the beginning, yes, to pay all their bills on time and building their credit score. I mean, how can that young person not financially succeed in life having that base? And they're learning by making mistakes with their parents when they still have a safety net and not when they're 25, yep, and they're falling flat on their face, making major mistakes, and there's no one there to help them out.
Yeah, you're talking about behavior shaping, right? Yeah. I mean, let's shape the behavior of good, on time, paying bills, understanding. In our family, we talk about what it takes to be a good roommate. And, you know, that's behavior shaping, in my opinion. I want to shape the behavior of, we don't leave dishes sitting on the counter. We put it in the dishwasher. If the dishwasher is fully clean, you empty it and you load. Yeah. This is being a good roommate. And it's behavior shaping around things like money and doing what you're saying. I agree. How can a kid not be financially successful when they understand that? I saw way too many 22 to 25 year olds that were graduating from college that were kind of like, well, it's still on my parents' credit card.
Yeah. And they knew nothing. And it just goes back, the best time to teach young kids is when they're safe at home. And as a parent, you still have to allow them to make mistakes. Let them overdraft their checking account once or twice. Yeah. Show them where the fees pop up. Show them how much that costs them. Let them miss a credit card payment when they're in high school and show them how that affected. But then also have them call the credit card company and ask to have that charge removed. And if it is, teach them, you know, sometimes you just have to ask and they might remove it. If it's the first time you made that mistake, credit card companies will oftentimes say, we'll let that one slide. Okay. But next time you'll have to pay it. And so teaching them that while they're at home rather than out in the real world. But the sad truth is that most adults in our country are also financially illiterate. And so you can't teach what you don't know. You can't teach the habits that you don't have yourself. So that's kind of the rub there.
Well, this may be an awesome place to stop because I think there's a challenge inherent in this. And that's for families that I have to imagine that many of my listeners are probably already on the path or at least walking down the path. But if you're not, which is perfectly fine, it's a great time to start. And that means picking up a book and reading it with your child and discussing it with them, talking about what you learned. And we've found, Dan, and I would throw this last question out to you. We found that when we started talking about, what do you remember? Like, what were your earliest money memories? What did you learn as a kid? How were your parents with money? That was also very eye-opening for young people. Because if their parents were poor with money, or maybe it was a taboo subject, they never ever talked about it, or there was fights, even worse, there was fights about money.
Yep.
They would kind of stick their head in the sand and be like, I don't ever want to deal with money because all it ever did was cause fights at home. Do you find that? Do you have that conversation with your students? What was money like at home? What are your parents?
We have surface level discussions about that, but I can't get too far or too in depth with what home life looks like just from an equity kind of a viewpoint. But to piggyback on what you said, Adam, I think there are many young kids who come from financially stressed households. And there are many kids who come from the opposite. And I see students coming out of both environments, willing and eager to learn about money, but also trying to avoid it. I don't think it has to do with the income level of the household. It has to do with the mindset of the household. Like for instance, growing up, I was raised by my mom. I had a sister. So there was two kids and a single parent with a low income. And it was a struggle at times, but money wasn't stressful because it was not taboo. And so even if you come from a low income household where maybe money is tight, that young person can still be eager to learn about money to to hopefully improve their future so that maybe money isn't tight for them. And on the flip side of that, coming from a wealthy family or a high income family, I see students that approach money both ways. Some of them are scared to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it because it's not openly talked about in their household.
Right.
But then others are very eager to learn. So I think it's more about the mindset and the openness of the household, not the income level of the household.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Dan, if people want to know more about you and get more of the goodness you're pumping out there in the world, where do they go?
They can go to sheiksfreaks.com, which my last name has two E's. So it's S-H-E-E-K-S-F-R-E-A-K-S. Or Sheiks Freaks on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, any of those. I'm also on Bigger Pockets and LinkedIn. Any of those will work.
Awesome. We're going to go check out your TikTok channel just to see what you're doing.
It's pretty new. But yeah, check it out. I think I have an alumni that manages it for me and she's doing a good job. I think we have two or three on there right now. I finally just decided I needed to do TikTok because that's where, you know, the young people are going now. It's Instagram, Snapchat, and TikTok, and it's more Snapchat and TikTok the younger you get. So we're on there. We're doing the best we can.
Indeed. And sidebar on that, there was a good friend of mine who just wrote a book and he said the publisher told him, make sure you set up TikTok and, you know, post some videos because that actually looks good when we launch. So
yeah,
maybe that's a little feather in your cap for this November when the book launches.
Yeah, by November, I hope that our TikTok has, you know, it won't just have 3 or 4, it'll have maybe 30 or 40 and it'll look good, like you said. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Dan, thanks for being here. I'm going to go be a freak.
I love it. I love it, Adam. And thanks for doing everything you do. We definitely are fighting the same fight. Everything that you're pumping out there is incredible and amazing. And, you know, we're just trying to help people have a little less stress about money, I think is what it comes down to. So
indeed.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you.